I want to ask you, cherry pick a few other specific items. I want to just pick out some of the things I think would be most important or interesting for oncologists to know about. Another thing I want to ask you about is upfront treatment of follicular lymphoma, because we saw the big plenary presentation looking at obinutuzumab as opposed to rituximab in that setting. And I wonder if you could just reflect back on what that study, the Gallium study, showed, and how, if at all, it affected your practice and the way you look at FL.
So there are a couple of things about the Gallium study. Fundamentally, it was a head-to-head comparison of obinutuzumab and rituximab in combination with either CHOP, bendamustine, or CVP chemotherapy. Now, for the follicular lymphoma patients, the treatment was chosen on a center basis. That means if you were participating in the study, everyone in your center either got bendamustine, CVP, or CHOP, regardless of which arm you got randomized to. That was to try to avoid some of the bias when someone walks in the door and you say, "Oh, gee, I'm not so sure about this patient. I'm going to give them X, Y, or Z." It helps prevent study bias. And importantly, there was a second cohort, which were the non-follicular lymphomas, which I'll touch on after I discuss the follicular lymphoma patients. So this was a very large study. Why was it such a large study? Well, because we're starting with a very high baseline. Rituximab plus chemo, followed by 2 years of maintenance, results in progression-free survivals of around 7 to 8 years. So this is pretty hard to beat, and you need pretty big numbers to actually show something meaningful. The study primary endpoint was differences in progression-free survival. And the reason that progression-free survival was chosen is if you're trying to beat a progression-free survival of 7 to 8 years, overall survival is really not easily obtainable. So the primary analysis was progression-free survival in the randomization, and there was a statistically significant improvement in progression-free survival in favor of obinutuzumab with a hazard ratio of 0.66. Now, 0.66 is associated with a 50% increase in progression-free survival. If it holds up, that's what a hazard ratio of 0.66 means. So among the patients who got obinutuzumab, they can expect a nearly 10-year progression-free survival, which is a difference from 7 years. And so if people are looking to get the maximum duration of benefit, then opting for obinutuzumab is a very reasonable thing. Obviously, the FDA agreed because obinutuzumab, as part of frontline therapy, was recently approved for patients with follicular lymphoma by the FDA. In my practice, I can say that we discuss the pros and cons. I believe it's a package deal that you have to do the obinutuzumab plus chemo plus maintenance. And since I don't give maintenance to everyone, it really makes a difference as to is it a patient who's a good candidate for maintenance. Now, who's a good candidate for maintenance? You can get lots of us and talk to them, and we'll have different opinions. But in my practice, I think the best candidate for maintenance is someone who's younger, in the middle of their career, and wants the maximum amount of time before they have to deal with their disease a second time. So for the 51-year-old homemaker with 3 kids in the house and they're in school and she doesn't want to have to deal with this until they're all out of the house and, in college, well, then honestly, I think obinutuzumab plus chemo followed by obinutuzumab maintenance is an excellent choice. But because we did not ask the question of whether with the obinutuzumab you actually need the maintenance, we really don't know what happens if you break out obinutuzumab and chemo without the maintenance. Do you still get this improvement in outcome? And that's not the way the study was designed, and it doesn't simply doesn't address that question.